From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. In the first half hour today, we'll find out about an upcoming Midwest Writers Workshop that will help veterans explore and cope with their war experiences at the same time as finding their voices in writing. We'll also ask if writing might help veterans deal with post-traumatic stress disorder. My guests are John Michelson and Emma Rainey, coordinators of the Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop. Then in the second half hour, we'll talk with Joyce Turner, coordinator for the Patient Voice Project. That's a program that offers creative writing classes to chronically ill hospital patients. That's all coming up. First, this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. How can writing help our veterans explore and work through their experiences? That's a question at the center of the upcoming Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop to be held next week, Friday, January 15th through Sunday the 17th. The workshop, sponsored by the University of Iowa Veterans Center and the UI Division of Continuing Education, will take place at the UI Distance Learning Site in downtown Iowa City. The workshop is free and open to all current and former military personnel, regardless of whether they're connected to the university. And you don't need any previous writing experience to participate. Joining me this half hour to talk about the Vets Writing Workshop are its coordinators. John Michelson is a veterans advisor with the University of Iowa Veterans Center. He joins us in the studio at Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Joining us by phone, Emma Rainey, a 2009 graduate of the University of Iowa Nonfiction Writing Program, now lives in Fairfield, an adjunct professor of English at Iowa Wesleyan College in Mount Pleasant, joining us by phone from warm Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Emma.
Hi there.
Okay, go ahead and tell us. How warm is it there?
You really don't want to know. Okay, it's supposed to go up to 75 today.
Oh, I'm sorry I asked.
It's only 100 degree difference.
Enjoy it for all of us there, Emma.
I will.
Emma, talk about this Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop. What was the inspiration for it? Let's start off with that.
Well, I mean, initially the inspiration was reading too many articles in The New Yorker and The New York Times about soldiers committing suicide, and really, at one point, it was just like overload. And it was just the next day, I marched myself up to the VA hospital in Iowa City and said, "I want to help. Can I teach a writing workshop?" And they just didn't quite know what to do with me. So it just never left me. It was just this like nagging itch I couldn't scratch, and I just kept trying to come at it from all these different angles, trying to partner up with a psychologist to see if I could get a grant to do an empirical study using structured writing therapy, and just nothing came together. And luckily, I met John Michelson this past fall, and I told him my desire to conduct a writing workshop, and he just said, okay. And I was like, oh, really? And so it's just taken off from there. And,
what told you, Emma, that writing would be something that would help our veterans? From your writing experience?
I know it from my own writing experience, and I also know that because I've looked at a lot of empirical studies that have used structured writing for therapy. For example, there's his name is Pennebaker, and he's done a ton of studies using structured writing therapy. But for myself, I've had some traumatic events in my life, and being in the nonfiction writing program, the greatest writing program on earth, I really learned through the writing process and then the revision process, which is re-seeing these traumatic events, you learn how to get perspective, you learn how to step back, you learn, it's just a natural byproduct healing from these experiences.
Mm-hmm. John Michelson, you've worked with veterans for many years at the University of Iowa. What is the goal of this workshop as you see it? To produce work of high literary quality?
Well, I don't necessarily think we're going to see high literary quality in a short 3-day workshop, but I think we're going to provide the veterans with the skills to better articulate what they want to do with their writing, to bring the message from their head to the paper so they can visualize it, so they can mold it, they can work with it. And, you know, it seemed like a no-brainer that Iowa City is the place to do this with, you know, being a city of literature, having a writer's workshop, having graduates of the workshop here.
So the expertise is concentrated here in Iowa City.
It's the right place at the right time.
Mm. And John absolutely said that correctly. You know, to give their story a shape, we're providing the space and time for these vets to write about their experiences so that they can be heard and create meaningful expression.
Give them shape. Emma, follow up on that. Give these stories shape. Are they shapeless now in many cases?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of these people don't have writing experiences. We have people coming in from the Vietnam War. We have people who are still being deployed. So there's a vast range of people. Do I think they're all writers? I don't think so. I imagine the vast majority of them are not. So what we're trying to do is provide them, you know, basic writing exercises, readings, the experience of workshopping their work, giving them tools on craft and practical applications in class writings, and then following it up with a two-week online, service, I don't know what else to call it, mm-hmm. to help them revise their stories.
So
because,
in this...
you know, this is just kind of giving them a jet-propelled, you know, start to their process.
So in the three-day workshop, much of what's going on will be sort of basic writing exercises, training, and then seen through the lens, all keeping in mind that these are vets. And how does that change it when you have, do you imagine, I know you come from a military family, you have veterans involved in writing as opposed to just everyday people involved in writing?
Well, I just think that, you know, having grown up in a military family, that very often soldiers are reluctant to verbally express, you know, their experiences. They've been trained to kind of uphold this fearless demeanor at all times. And so, but what happens, I mean, we are all human beings, and so over time that can really start to wear you down. And I think that writing offers this liminal space between holding it in and speaking it out. It's just this kind of in-between place. And once you get it down on the page, you really can begin, as I said before, to get perspective, and you can work on it. And the ideal thing about having all the teachers that I'll be having helping me teach this is that, you know, we really know how to guide people. Oh, this is a really interesting part of your story. Let's investigate this. You know, mm-hmm. that's what I want to hear more about.
I wanted to pick up, ask John about this, too. You know, having veterans come back, you are dealing with a lot of veterans coming back to a university atmosphere, culture. And that culture is very different than the military one, not as expressive.
One of the things we see with veterans and in law enforcement and other public service fields is it's very hard to take your armor off in front of people who don't know what your life is about. It's much easier to sit and talk with your peers about common experiences, to write. We have a very wide range of ages. I think we go from 21 to 60 plus among the students. We're going to have a wide range of disabilities in the room. I know of at least one person bringing their wheelchair, and another person is coming with a visual impairment. So we're going to have to, from the instructor side, really step up our game and to let these people, you know, express themselves in a format that is comfortable for them.
Mm-hmm. How many wars are represented among the veterans so far signed up?
Oh, dear. I think we've got a pretty good range from post-Vietnam through the current conflict.
Mm-hmm. And from all parts of the country or mostly the Midwest?
Predominantly the Midwest because of travel issues. But that said, we've got several from the Chicago area, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Omaha. I believe we've got one coming from Arizona. So some people are traveling for this.
And there are still some slots open, I understand. 50 is the limit.
50 is our cap.
Is your cap, and there are a number of spaces?
I believe we still have about 15 openings.
Okay, to find out more about this Midwest Vets Writing Workshop, go to the web and go to MidwestVetsWritingWorkshop.com. I want to ask you, Emma, What I know, the veterans haven't written anything, but you've opened a wiki on this website, I believe, and you're already getting some input from veterans, aren't you?
I am, and it's not only from the wiki, but emails and phone calls also. But yeah, the vets, I offered it so that the vets who maybe wanted to get started in the writing process could take a look at it and start writing on their own. They have the choice of either bringing the writings to the workshop or just, you know, keeping them private. But yeah, some of the vets have responded, and it's pretty
Do you have any examples of things you might share with us from that?
Well, sure. One of the exercises I have is called mapping. And when I was a rhetoric teacher, a TA at the University of Iowa, this was an exercise I did with my students there, but I tailored it a little bit more for the vets. So what they do is they choose a word or phrase as a topic. It could be a feeling, a question, a person, a memory, a body part, a day and time. And they place that word in the middle of a page and encircle it. And then one of the vets wrote something. He had two words he wrote down on the wiki, spiritual and America. And is it okay if I read it a little?
Sure. We have about a minute before a break. Does it work there?
Okay. So an excerpt from it is, I keep wondering what is happening to the fabric of America. Living means more than just a standard of living. There has to be an intangible spiritual part in order for there to be real life, full life. Sort of like a house is not a home. My observation is that many Americans have lost all sense of what true patriotism is all about. Patriotism, to me, is being willing to sacrifice as necessary. Yellow magnetic ribbons on the back of cars are not patriotism. Maybe I have too much time on my hands to think about America and worry about it. You know, so, I mean, there's a beginning, you know.
What has this been like for you, Emma, as someone trained in nonfiction writing to tap into this well of people who want to express themselves and need maybe some tips on how to?
Honestly, Ben, it's been one of the most astonishing experiences I've ever had. There are times at night when I can barely go to sleep thinking of all these stories people are emailing into me and calling me about. There was one vet in fact, John talked about taking off the armor. He's in Texas, and he cannot attend due to the distance. But he spoke about how he realized for the first time that he had never taken his armor off, and his commitment to always be there fighting the bad guys, the fear, the caution was always there, but could never show it. And now he's worn out, and his health is failing, and he can't relax. And, you know, when I read that, I just want to keep doing this and keep doing this. And keep, I mean, we have just touched the surface of a deep well of experiences that need to be voiced and heard.
Emma Rainey, we'll have to ask you to hold on, please. Joining us from Phoenix, Emma is one of the coordinators of the Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop to be held January 15th through the 17th in downtown Iowa City, along with John Michelson joining us in the studio. If you have a question or a comment about writing, or you're a veteran and would like to share a comment, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be right back.
19 minutes past 12 and currently 13 degrees in Iowa City and 11 in Cedar Rapids. Support comes from McDonough Structures, a progressive, environmentally conscious construction firm specializing in custom kitchens and cabinetry tailored to the customer's desires and a choice of styling and materials. Information at McDonoughStructures.com. And for the Lensing Funeral and Cremation Services, providing pre-planning options to meet individual needs, Lensing Funeral and Cremation Services, the tradition of our family, serving your family with two locations in Iowa City and Coralville, online, LensingFuneral.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Talk of the Nation. It's Politics Day. In the first hour, our political junkie, Ken Rudin, visits us for the first time in 2010 with everything you missed while you sipped the eggnog. 1 o'clock today, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking about the Patient Voice Project. That's a program that offers creative writing classes to chronically ill patients and helps them work through, cope with their problems of being ill. That coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, we're focusing on writing and our veterans in an upcoming Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop to be held next week, Friday, January 15th through Sunday, the 17th, is open to all veterans, active or retired veterans. And joining me, the coordinators, John Michelson and Emma Rainey, by phone. Who should, I imagine when we gave out that contact information, MidwestVetsWritingWorkshop.com, veterans are listening right now and asking, is this something for me? John, what would you say to that? How do people know, a veteran know if this writing workshop might be something for him or her?
If they're even thinking about it, it's probably for them. And you know, if they've got questions about eligibility, our really only criteria is that at some point in your life you had the uniform and you said, I do, to the government, and your adventure started there, you've got a story to tell.
Emma Rainey, what sort of stories are you looking for? This is not just combat, is it?
Well, no. I mean, there are vets who are coming who have not experienced combat. And, you know, they have just as compelling stories. Trust me, I've been on the phone with some of them. I'm like, and they say, I'm sorry, if someone more who needs this workshop more needs to take it, I'll step down. I'm like, no, you can come. That's fine. We want to hear your stories. We have a lot of literature that we'll be using as models for the vets. And one is a book of essays by Tim O'Brien called The Things They Carried. And there's an excerpt for it I'd like to read that's a really good example of, you know, it's not all horror and combat. It's from an essay called Spin. He says, "The war wasn't all terror and violence. Sometimes things could almost get sweet. For instance, I remember a little boy with a plastic leg. I remember how he hopped over to Smith and asked for a chocolate bar. GI number one, the kid said, and Smith laughed and handed over the chocolate. When the boy hopped away, Smith clucked his tongue and said, war is a B-I-T-C-H, and he shook his head sadly, one leg for Christ's sake." You know, and so there are all sorts of stories that our vets have, and I just think it's really important that they have the opportunity to say it, whether they saw combat or not.
Mm-hmm. So the whole gamut here, from fear, brutality, boredom, anxiety, loss, and so forth, captured in these stories. I wonder, let's talk a little bit about how and why writing can help people work through trauma. Emma, what is your take on that? Why does this work? You mentioned some studies beforehand. What is going on in our brains?
Well, I don't know if I could speak to that. I'm a writer, not a scientist.
What do you imagine is going on?
Right. Well, the act of writing and revision, not necessarily the quality, in research has proved out that it can help soldiers develop helping coping strategies. So a lot of studies have been done with cancer victims, rape victims, people who have lost their job, college students. Astonishingly enough, there has not been an empirical study done with soldiers and writing therapy with soldiers with PTSD. And I think this is something that really, really needs to be addressed, because it would be, I mean, I know it would help, but it would be nice to be able to prove that scientifically. So I think what happens is you just gain that little bit of distance when you see it on the page and you start working with the story with other people and seeing what's important, what's not. And you also get rid of that kind of victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a bigger picture of the whole thing.
In fact, an email that just came in from Brian in Cedar Rapids touches on the points you just mentioned. He writes, "I am currently in the Iowa Army National Guard and have not yet seen any combat as of yet. However, when I was active duty in the Marine Corps, I was deployed to Africa and have a few stories. Writing, memoir, poetry, and short story has helped me overcome some of the stresses of the military experience. While on active duty, writing became a creative outlook and avenue, and at one darker point, a lifesaver. I applaud you for your positive and selfless energy. I do believe writing is therapeutic." Testimonial there from Brian, live on the radio. So that is much of what you're hearing when people contact you, I imagine.
Absolutely. And it is, because it's a way, as I said, a lot of these soldiers are trained not to speak this. So writing is that liminal space where they have room, where they can let it go. And we all know when we speak to people, you know, how you feel a little bit better afterwards.
Sure.
So writing provides that same kind of outlet.
Mm-hmm. Now, will we be able to, after this writing workshop, I suppose it's up to the individual writers whether the public gets to see the essay or whatever the outcome is.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that. I wish I had thought of providing maybe a public opportunity for people to hear their voices, because I think that's also an important part of the healing process, not just for the soldiers. I think we as civilians need to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about Andrew Carroll editing that wonderful Operation Homecoming book about Iraq and Afghanistan. All these letters, emails, personal narratives, poetry, fiction, you know, they're wonderful. It's fantastic to read this book. So that's one avenue that it's coming out. There's also, the military has a magazine called Veterans Voices. That would also be another logical place for these vets to send their work.
John Michelson, you had something to add on this point.
I was going to say that Operation Homecoming has led to a DVD, a nice book being published. One of the short stories that started as a colonel's journal as he transported the body of a dead Marine out to Wyoming became an HBO film of great acclaim, Taking Chance. So just, you know, a simple mission stateside brought such emotional turmoil to this man that he had to write it down.
Mm-hmm. I understand this is a workshop that is free, and so it's just a matter of signing up and getting to Iowa City for the 15th through the 17th.
It is, and the Heartland Inn reached out to us and provided us a block of rooms at an extremely reasonable rate. We are still seeking donations of food so that we can provide lunch both Saturday and Sunday. So if there's anybody out there that's got contacts in the grocery or restaurant world, I'd love to talk to you.
Okay. Why don't you throw your telephone number out there?
Okay. The office to the U of I Veterans Center is 319-384-2020.
Okay. 319-384-2020 to get in charge of to get in touch with John Michelson, one of the coordinators of the Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop, January 15th through the 17th. More information at MidwestVetsWritingWorkshop.com. Emma, you are so excited about this project, I can tell.
I know.
That it's exciting you even more than the warm temperatures in Arizona. Where do you think this could go from here? This doesn't sound like a project that will stop after one workshop.
It doesn't. I mean, I just keep thinking of the way it can expand. One thing is I want to offer for the area monthly meetings where we can all get together and read each other's work and do that. And hopefully the vets who go off to other places can do the same, and I can help them find writers in the area to help them. But I'm thinking, wouldn't this be a great model for every university who has a veterans office mm-hmm. to be able to have these kind of classes? And the big thing I want to do is an online course. So many people have written asking if we can teach this online. Because they just can't make it for jobs or, you know, the distance or whatever. And I think that would be a huge, huge gift to the veterans community.
Just a few seconds left. John, do you know of any other programs like this in the country?
There are some in the greater New York area, and they're starting to pop up in larger population centers. But locally, the Division of Continuing Education is interested in working with us to create this as a distance learning course and actually offer it for credit.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for joining us this half hour. John Michelson and Emma Rainey, coordinators of the Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop, to take place next week, January 15th through the 17th. To find out more information, go to the website MidwestVetsWritingWorkshop.com. I assume all the contact information is there. John and Emma, thank you very much. Emma, be prepared for the cold weather and more snow when you return. When do you return to Iowa?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay.
I believe you're having a storm, but
yes,
I'll be there.
It might not be tomorrow. I don't know how the airports are going to look after that. Emma, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks
from Phoenix. John Michelson, thank you very much. When we come back here on The Exchange, continuing on our theme of writing, we'll talk about the Patient Voice Project. That's a program that offers creative writing classes to chronically ill patients. We'll talk to the coordinator of that program, as well as a participant, a former nurse practitioner who suffered a brain injury during a bike accident. We'll find out how writing can help chronic illness in just a moment when we return. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. And if you were with us in our first half hour, you heard how we discussed the veterans writing about their experiences at next week's Vets Midwestern Writing Workshop. Now we'd like to take the rest of the hour to look at how writing may help people work through trauma caused by chronic illness. The Patient Voice Project at the University of Iowa offers creative writing classes to chronically ill hospital patients. The classes offered by the project, created by students at the University of Iowa Writers Workshop and the UI's Arts Share, are free. The classes are conducted in both groups and one-on-one sessions and intended for all ages. Joining us now to tell us more about the Patient Voice Project, Joyce Turner, an instructor for the Patient Voice Project and also a 2009 graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop fiction program. Welcome to you, Joyce.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here, Ben.
Also joining Joyce in our studio here at Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City, Bridget Rudin. She is a participant in the project. Welcome to you, Bridget.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start off with Joyce as an instructor of in this project. Talk about how this project started. How it was a few years ago that this was linked up, the expertise of the writing in the community here, which is significant and known worldwide, with chronically ill patients, and also Iowa City being a medical center known far and wide.
Yes, this was started several years ago by Writers Workshop student Austin Bunn, and he began the program in which outside funding from donors such as Johnson & Johnson pays for instruction of students who are writing about chronic illness, what it's like to go through it, finding a certain aspect of it which would be interesting to a reader, and learning how to shape that into a more literary form. One of the goals of the program is for students to write 15 minutes a day, four times a week, to improve their health. And another goal is to possibly produce a piece of writing which would be published in the Patient Voice Anthology.
Okay, very good. So explain how it works. The patients are made aware of this possibility of the program, and then they volunteer for it, get in touch with you. What are the steps taken after that?
After that, we pair up a student and an instructor, and they find a place to meet, which is usually a coffee shop or at Dye House, the writer's workshop. And they go through usually six sessions. It can be extended up to 10, but usually it's six. And these are an hour long, and the patient student goes through writing exercises. For example, we will talk about characterization, description, details, structure, and finding the shape of the story. And the instructor will suggest ways in which the story could be made perhaps a tighter piece of literary writing, and also possibly finding a correlation between the illness that the patient is going through and other factors that are also occurring in the student's life. They fill out a dual chronology, one in which they discuss what developmental factors happened at certain ages, and another one in which they talk about different things that happened with their illness, their diagnosis, their treatment, and then mm-hmm. their recovery.
I imagine this must be a fertile ground for aha experiences, where only in the writing does an individual, writing about their own life, put a couple of elements together and say, well, I understand it in a different way.
I think that's true. I've had patients say, well, I never thought about it that way, or they didn't realize that a specific aspect of their story was just fascinating to someone who was unfamiliar with it.
Uh-huh. Let me turn now to Bridget Rudin. You are a participant in this project. How long have you been involved?
My accident was a year and a half ago, and so I was involved with Joyce last summer.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your accident and the illness that you have now resulting from that.
In May of 2008, I survived severe brain injury following a bike accident, like you mentioned, and I suffered since that time four brain surgeries, and also had two grand mal seizures, the last which was 6 weeks ago. I think it's amazing that I have survived the trauma that I have endured, and what's powerful about being here today is that my dream was to be able to speak to those in the military that suffer from brain injury, to show them how I've survived it.
Mm-hmm. And how has the brain injury affected you, your thinking, you mentioned your speech?
Yes, I have. In speech, the big thing is aphasia. And I had to relearn over time how to walk, how to talk, how to read, how to write, and raise three children. And I survived that experience by incredible support that was provided by physical, occupational, and speech therapists. Mm-hmm. But the speech were the most powerful for me because they have stayed with me the longest for the aphasia.
Well, your involvement with the Patient Voice Project, I believe you said, started in the spring of 2009, and you have some writings now that you've been working on. Would you be able to share an excerpt from us from your work? Go ahead. I'll let you just set it up if you'd like to.
On June 2nd of 2008, I moved my mouth carefully around the endotracheal tube to tell my husband, Todd, I love you. I was tracking him with my eyes and feeling his face with my left hand. I was not yet following commands, but I would nod to his questions. I was also moving my legs to the point where the nurses needed to secure me. My temperature, heart rate, and blood pressure were high. Later that day, I was given my tracheotomy and my gastrointestinal tube. On June 3rd of 2008, my left ear was draining a clear fluid. My mother was convinced this was cerebral spinal fluid. On June 4th, the physician, Dr. Andrew Jackson, sutured my left ear to protect the movement of my cerebral spinal fluid. I continued to have an elevated fever. On June 5th, I had an increased blood pressure of 160 over 90, a heart rate of 125, and rapid breathing. I was much more drowsy than usual. I was transferred from the SICU to an intermediate neuroscience inpatient unit. On June 6th, I had an increased white blood cell count of 34.8 and a low hemoglobin of 8.1. A chest x-ray showed left lower lobe pneumonia. My mother noted more swelling of the left side of my face and eye. The cerebral spinal fluid continued to drain, and I had four different nurses that particular morning. Inconsistently in my care was hard for my family to witness.
Mm. Bridget Rudin, a former nurse practitioner, reading from her writing about suffering a brain injury in a bike accident, as you heard there in the summer of 2008. Tell us, Joyce Turner, what's going on in that writing? Obviously, we're getting to some points. You're probing some areas that are very difficult to recall, maybe for brain injuries reasons, but also because it's so emotionally laden.
Right. It is emotionally laden. And the fact that Bridget had a brain injury and the brain itself, which she has, is trying to recall the information is a bit problematic. But the fact that Bridget was a pediatric nurse practitioner means that she has an enormous reservoir of understanding the medical and clinical terms which were applicable to her case. So she had the advantage, I think, of being able to look at her medical history and to reconstruct it. There is a notice that you're picking up on, Ben, I think, is a certain matter-of-factness to the narrative in which all these horrible things are happening, and yet it's dictated, ironically, with a certain clinical tone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful because it shows that Bridget is understanding everything that she was going through, and yet it's just something that a lot of patients just have to get through because it's part of their care.
You've just joined us talking with Joyce Turner, instructor for the Patient Voice Project, a program that offers creative writing classes to chronically ill hospital patients. Also joining us in the studio, Bridget Rudin, former nurse practitioner. She suffered a brain injury in a bike accident in 2008, and she just wrote an excerpt of some writing she's done about that. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question about writing, a question about the Patient Voice Project, we'll have our guest here in the next few minutes, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. How has this writing experience, Bridget, changed how you view, how you cope with this brain injury?
It's very profound. It's a way to heal the whole soul. that has been affected by this. And I'm just grateful that I can actually have gotten to the point that I can write. Mm-hmm. I can type again. I can do everything again. It's slow, but I did it.
When you were typing, recalling what you just read here, the days immediately after the brain injury, waking up in the hospital, having your husband with you, doctors, nurses, and so forth, when you were recalling that, is that difficult to write about it? Is it cathartic, therapeutic?
Well, both, because I was not in memory of that at all. It was my mother and my husband that told me what had actually happened, because I was unconscious for a long time, the entire time at the University of Iowa Hospital, mm-hmm. for a month. So to talk about it again, it's very emotional.
I understand, Joyce, you have another, we hadn't had, perhaps I would have had another participant joining us this half hour. And you had brought her writings that you could share as well. This is another person in the project currently?
Yes. This is Devin Borm, and she is recovering from breast cancer. Okay, and this is a piece that she wrote about getting her diagnosis. Okay, we decided to get in the car and go to the store around 3:30 p.m. The shopping took some of the edge off, since the irony of the situation was that I really was not all that concerned about waiting a week to get my results until the phone call came. To make matters worse, it was April Fool's Day. There was no way that a doctor could ethically call in an April Fool's on a patient. It would just not happen. As we left the store, my friends pushed me to call the doctor back, since I had not heard from her yet, and it was 4:30. The office closed at 5. I dialed up the number, and the office manager told me to hold on the line. In a few short seconds, my doctor was on, telling me she didn't want me to wait until my next appointment to give me my results. Her very frank tone said it all. "I received the results of your biopsy, and it is cancerous. After reviewing your file, I see you have an Iowa address for your insurance. Are you here visiting, or did you just move here?" I replied that I was in a transition period and just didn't know. "Well, you may want to think about your options here or going back to Iowa." "How much time do I have to decide?" I asked, while trying to hold it together and be tough. The only way I knew how to be when presented with less than desirable situations. The doctor told me to know that in situations such as mine, with an aggressive tumor, I had about a month to get my plan together. In the meantime, I needed some additional testing. I thanked her for letting me know, told her I would come in for my Monday appointment, and immediately went into survival mode.
That was an excerpt from the writing of Devin
Borm,
a participant in the Patient Voice Project. Now, for you as an instructor in this project, what is your reaction to writing like that? Did that go through many drafts? Did you work with her, for instance, on this writing?
Well, Devin told me this first in a coffee shop, verbally, and I noted the power and the impact of it, and I noticed that in the draft that I wanted to try to reconstruct that scene, try to recapture it. And so some of my advice to her was maybe to add in the conversation that her friends and she were having, mm-hmm. to include sensory details and to make the reader be forced to linger in that scene so that the tension would build up.
Is that what you mean when you earlier said shaping a story?
Yes. Well, shaping a story is also part of finding the most succinct parts of it, which the writer should narrow down. It's like cropping a photograph. Mm-hmm. Illnesses can be lifelong. For example, you can have something that you're diagnosed with when you're an infant, and it can be chronic, or you can have something that lasts only a week or a month. So you have to find the right way to tell it.
So in telling this larger narrative, you're looking for the right vignettes to place in that set to line up for a larger overarching narrative. Is that sort of right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Let's go to John in Davenport. John is joining us. Good afternoon, John.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I have mental illnesses. I have physical illnesses, too, because I'm getting older. But I have paranoid schizophrenia, major depressive syndrome, and anxiety and panic attacks, and post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't know how to describe what they've done to my life, but I write a lot, I had hoped at one time to go to the MFA program at Iowa, University of Iowa. I have a master's degree in library science and a postgraduate degree, postgraduate studies in instructional technology. But, of course, they haven't done me much good because I spend most of my time dealing with my illness.
Mm-hmm. You said it would be hard to describe, John, how writing has helped your mental illnesses. But can you imagine what life would have been like without the writing there to go through what you're experiencing?
Well, that's sort of funny because I was brutally treated as a subject of violence in 1993. And I was in group therapy before that, and they put me in individual therapy. And my voices said that my therapist wanted to know what I thought. And so I wrote 12 books on what I thought. Mm. And they're not published, of course. I have no chance of getting published. But I have these manuscripts, and I've gone to Kinko's and had them printed out. And it's helped a lot.
Very good. John, well, thank you for sharing your experience with writing, helping your mental illnesses, and we wish you well. John from Davenport.
Thank you.
This email from Susan as we get to the end of our hour. Programs in creative writing like the ones discussed today, Susan writes from West Des Moines, are so important, and I think they help demonstrate how important creative expression, whether writing, visual arts, theater, is to healthy human living overall. It's great to see how many people are taking part in them. There seems to be a freer view of creative expression developing in our culture, and I applaud it. Whatever you may think of blogging and social media, writes Susan, I believe they also offer needed outlets for people to give voice to their life experiences. This is interesting. Also, John from Davenport, and in this email, it's not writing for others necessarily, though others may write. Bridget and Joyce benefit from this. It's writing primarily because you, the writer, benefit, Joyce.
I would agree. I agree with John and your email correspondent that you get some sort of control over writing when you get it as a story on a piece of paper, and you can see it on the page and you can edit it, you can cross things out, you can change it. It does give you a degree of control.
Bridget, I want to ask you, when you tackled the writing down of your brain injury, your bicycle accident, what were the biggest challenges for you?
As far as what goes?
As transforming this experience into written word. What did you struggle with any parts of it?
What's really struggling, I think, for brain injury, in addition, besides the seizures, is the depression and the post-traumatic stress disorder that go on. Treating that and absolving that as best I could. It was very healing to do the writing, though, because it brought forth all of the feelings, all the emotions, everything that has occurred to me over time, in addition to this experience, mm-hmm. that things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Earlier was mentioned, I think it was Joyce that mentioned, that part of this often moves people away from this feeling of being a victim. I wonder if Bridget, in that case, of course, you could replay that instance and say, why was I on my bike? Why did I don't know the specific instances, but why did that happen to me on my bike?
Right.
You couldn't tend to feel
now.
Like a victim. Were you at that point at some point?
Yes, I was. But I'm to a point now that I feel like I'm here to heal other people from their experience and how they recover. Because I think in what I've done to recover and how I've blown away the physicians in what I've done, I want to share that with others to help them heal.
Mm-hmm. What are your plans specifically for you, Bridget, doing that?
Well, I've already spoke at the University of Iowa for nursing, the grand rounds I did. And now I've been asked to talk to med students this spring. And in addition, I've also been asked, the CEO of the University of Iowa would like me to speak to those working on their master's degree in hospital administration to tell them my whole story and how I've survived.
Joyce Turner, as an instructor, can you point to, this was mentioned in our first half hour, scientific studies that have looked, these are all great anecdotes. We know there's something going on here, but to your knowledge, what are the scientific studies that have looked at how writing can help those with chronic illness?
Well, that's an excellent question, Ben. I don't want this program to make large promises that it can't keep in terms of health benefits. But Emma mentioned the Pennebaker essay and the Pennebaker study. There was a husband and wife team. One was a clinical psychologist and another was an immunologist, the Glassers, and they were at Ohio State University. They did a study of immune systems and how they can be how the T cells can recover if people are given an opportunity to write, and it was a very looked to me like a well constructed trial. I'm also a lab tech at the university, so I read it with a bit of a jaded eye, but I was pretty much convinced.
A skeptic's eye.
Well, yes, you don't want to make
a scientist's eye
too large claims, but I really do believe that it's got wonderful benefits for people, not just mentally but physically.
Joyce, we have to go. Will you tell us how people find out more about the Patient Voice Project?
Yes, there's a website. Just type in the Patient Voice Project, and you'll find the links, and you can find the phone numbers to call.
Okay, very good. Just use your favorite search engine to look for the Patient Voice Project. Wouldn't be bad to put Iowa in that keyword search either. Joyce Turner, instructor for the Patient Voice Project, thank you very much for joining us this hour. And, of course, to Bridget Rudin, thank you very much. We wish you continued astounding recovery from your brain injury from 2008. Bridget, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins. Technical support also from Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.